Welcome to the Ithaca Radio Hour, a weekly program of news, views, culture, and events in our area. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Today is Monday, April 14th, 2003. On tonight's show, we feature a piece by Aaron Riddle on how the Cayuga Green Project will affect the county's clean energy initiative, and a poem by Michelle Courtney Berry performed at this week's Take Back the Night rally. Also, music by Patty Whitten. But first, we take a look at local libraries' response to the USA Patriot Act. Last February, the Tompkins County Public Library Board of Trustees voted unanimously to formally protest certain provisions of the USA Patriot Act that affect the privacy of library patrons' records and their use of the Internet. The Tompkins County Public Library's resolution follows those passed by the New York Library Association and the American Library Association. All three organizations, while recognizing the importance of preventing terrorist attacks, point out the provisions of the USA Patriot Act, as well as the Homeland Security Act and new FBI guidelines, quote, undermine constitutionally protected rights of Americans by expanding the authority of the government beyond already existing laws to investigate the private lives of citizens, unquote. Under current library policy, any request for patron information must be accompanied by a search warrant, subpoena, or court order. However, under the new law, the library must not disclose the existence of the warrant or that records were produced as a result of the warrant. To learn about how academic research libraries are responding to the new laws, Jesse Lind interviewed Associate University Librarian for Collections at Cornell, Ross Atkinson.
Under the Patriot Act of 2001, the FBI is no longer required to demonstrate probable cause to obtain a search warrant for any tangible thing that may be part of an ongoing investigation related to terrorism, including books, records, papers, floppy disks, data tapes, and computer hard drives. And if, under the Patriot Act, the FBI does come poking around for information about you at the library, you won't learn about it from the library. The librarian could go to jail for telling you. We spoke to Associate Librarian Ross Atkinson in his office in Olin Library on the Cornell campus last week and asked him how Cornell University libraries are responding to the new regime.
In the library community, a number of us have been concerned about the potential for the Patriot Act to increase the possibility that we may be compelled to compromise some of our users' privacy. Libraries operate according to a very straightforward, clear set of ethical guidelines, which is sort of centered in something that's called the Library Bill of Rights. And that really places privacy and confidentiality at the center of every library's responsibility, not just, you know, public libraries, academic libraries, all types. And this is something we've always been concerned about and have had policies and procedures to deal with.
The American Library Association and the New York State Library Association worked hard in the months after passage of the Patriot Act to educate its members and encourage policy and procedural changes.
Right after the Patriot Act was enacted, we had a group of librarians on campus led by Pat Court, who's a librarian in the law library, actually look at the act and see how it could affect us. And that task force came up with a couple of suggestions, both of which we followed. One is that we need in place a policy for the whole library system as far as what you would do if someone actually came in and asked for information. The person on the desk, we are saying, does not have the authority to surrender that information himself or herself. That person has to refer the question to the administration. Okay, and the administration will then take the appropriate action on that. But it's got to go upstairs rather than simply handing over information over the desk.
According to the task force summary report, all law enforcement requests for information will be referred to the university council. Apparently, the legal experts are not offering to fight it all the way to the Supreme Court, so librarians across the country are taking preemptive action. They are purging their databases of all but essential records and stripping those records of any personal information to the extent possible. However, as Mr. Atkinson warns, there are limits to what can be done.
The second thing we have done is to put together another group that has done quite a thorough job of looking throughout the library system at all of the records we keep that specifically link individuals to specific information so that we can do a a monitoring of this and ensure that we are keeping only those records that are absolutely essential. The problem that we've got, of course, is that now that more and more is online, there's information not in our control, but in control of vendors and database providers all over the world as to what our users are using. And there's absolutely nothing, obviously, we can do about that. So, I mean, I think from my point of view, the only thing we can do is kind of raise our users' consciousness about the fact that, you know, if they're looking at something, it's possible someone's going to know that they're looking at that and possibly draw some conclusions from that.
We asked Mr. Atkinson whether this might have a chilling effect on the people using Cornell libraries for scholarly research.
Certainly, it can have a chilling effect on what users are prepared to use. So some people may not look at certain things that they'd really want to look at or need to look at because they'd be afraid that someone might know that they were looking at those. I mean, we're a research library, which means we provide access to all kinds of stuff. In some cases, the more out of the mainstream it is, the more important it is for some kinds of research. So there's a certain amount of, I don't know, crackpot, you know, kind of material that is there that is of value for scholarship. Okay, I mean, you know, Ku Klux Klan and all kinds of stuff you're allowed to bring. Okay, if people, and if users of this information feel that other people, like law enforcement or anyone, is going to be looking for someone using this information and be suspicious of them, then that does have a chilling effect.
Finally, we asked if a librarian might find a certain person requesting certain library material suspicious and file a report with law enforcement.
I can't imagine that it could be dangerous for someone. I mean, someone's reading, you know, something about how to create chemical weapons or something. I mean, it would never happen. In other words, there's such a range of research that's done within a library like this that, I mean, no librarian I know of would ever challenge anybody for doing research on anything. This is an issue of professional ethics. Librarians are individuals like everybody else, and I'm giving you my opinion of all of this, and there are many librarians in the system who have various opinions, various shades of points of view on this. So it's not, you know, it's not as if we're all marching exactly to the same tempo.
That was Jesse Lind interviewing Ross Atkinson. You're listening to the Ithaca Radio Hour. Ithaca has been known to set the trends for progressive living in many ways. And in January 2001, Ithaca once again led the way when Tompkins County installed on the newly built library the largest photovoltaic system on the East Coast at that time. Aaron Riddle reports.
The 143-kilowatt solar panel system produces clean and quiet energy and is still running today. It can generate enough electricity to power 40 homes while reducing carbon dioxide emissions by up to 200 tons per year. It has produced about 1,500 kilowatts this year alone. And not only do these solar panels generate clean energy, but they also insulate the library roof, save energy costs in heating and air conditioning, and extend the roof's life by guarding it from weather damage. Unfortunately, the young solar panels are in for some challenges, and soon. The city of Ithaca will soon begin construction of the Cayuga Green Project. This project, located in part directly behind the library, between Cayuga and Clinton Streets, includes plans for a 680-car parking garage and an apartment and commercial building 120 feet high. It's these 120 feet that threaten the solar panels. Though fully functional now, when the apartment building is erected directly to the south of the library, the panels will be sitting partially in the shade.
There has been always an interest at the county level in energy efficiency to save money for taxpayers. And New York State, through NYSERDA, the New York State Energy Research and Development NYSERDA, has been encouraging installation of these panels.
Julie Kiefer, who represents Cayuga Heights on the Tompkins County Board of Representatives, can see the solar panels atop the library from her nearby office. She was the primary county board representative involved in getting the solar panels installed.
The idea was challenging for us to sell because everyone knows Ithaca is cloudy and rainy, and people just have the general idea that you can't get much from sun in this climate, and that's just not true. You do much better when it's a clear sky, but even through clouds, if the sun's up there, insulation comes through and you have some solar gain.
Dan Kogan is the 5th Ward Ithaca City Council person and an engineer for Tatum Engineering. There he does energy audits to determine how apartment buildings can save energy and works on research projects. Kogan was appointed to chair the Cayuga Green Client Committee. He and other city officials are responsible for making decisions about the design of the project and for helping to guide it between Ithaca Common Council meetings. From where he sits in Tatum's downtown offices one snowy Sunday morning, the library seems out of place, but he does see some solutions.
You know, I believe in density in a downtown, and so I'm very glad that the library is downtown. I think it has a huge impact on bringing people downtown, and that's really important. But the reality is it's a one-story building in a 10-story building zone. It's not an ideal use. It's one thing to have a rather large one-story building in a high-density zone, and then it's another thing to have to limit what gets built around it because of what happens to be on the roof. So there are solutions, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, the solutions are finding other ways of making sure that the solar panels are producing energy.
The city and county have talked about some possible solutions. One is to move the panels to the north side of the library. Another is to install replacement panels to cover lost energy production. They could be installed on the north side of the library or on a new Cayuga Green building. Either way, one might wonder why the panels were put on the south side of a one-story building to begin with.
It's always been my personal belief that it's a mistake to have one-story development in the core centers of a little metropolitan area. But the nature of the county's acquisition of that building, namely, it was a gift from the Park Foundation. Mrs. Park had a vision of this reuse of the old Woolworth building for a library. She would not allow us to add any stories to that building. She would not allow us to demolish that building and replace it with a multi-story building. So we had no choice, and the majority of my colleagues felt we had no choice but to accept this generous gift and to use a one-story building in the middle of the city. They weren't on the north side to begin with because the library had already been designed. There are raised areas on the roof housing mechanical equipment that is part of the redesign of the library. And placing the panels on the north side would automatically shade some of them anyway. So that's why they were on the south side of the library.
When I spoke with Tim Joseph, chair of the Tompkins County Board of Representatives, in his office at the county courthouse, he said the county did have some concerns about solar access, but they made their decision based on what they thought the city's development plans were at the time.
We did have some discussion of it, and we talked about what the place was zoned for and what the city was likely to build there. And the city did have a master plan at that point that showed what they were anticipating going in there, and I think it was about 4-story structures. The Cayuga Green project had not yet been thought up and brought forward. So based on the best information we had at the time, it looked like shading wouldn't be a problem. It's clear that shading now is a problem, and we have to find a way to deal with it.
Julie Kiefer knows this project could be a strong educational model for green energy initiatives, and she's concerned about how the upcoming changes will affect the system's overall function.
Moving them so that we don't lose any reduction in greenhouse gas emissions, and so we, the county, continue to get the benefits of this benign form of electric generation and save money. Sounds okay to me if there's a feasible way to do it, but I have no idea what details are involved, so it's hard for me to say whether it's a good idea or not.
It's not clear to anyone yet how this issue will be resolved. The city is interested in keeping the panels going for pretty much the same reasons, but it's not the main focus of the Cayuga Green project.
I don't think that the impact on the solar panels does need to be that great. We have determined that if we did nothing at all, there could be a 20% impact on the energy production. and I think we will do something, and so that impact will be less. And then I guess ultimately the other question is how much of an impact are we willing to accept? I would agree that a 23% impact is probably too high, but is a 5% impact, is that something we could live with, or a 10% impact? So we'll have to look at that. You know, the county certainly has a vested interest in keeping them operating, and the city doesn't want to negatively impact them, but the city is not going to adjust the scale of the project because of where the solar panels are. The solar panels were placed, unfortunately, in the worst possible location for any development on that site, and it's been the city's intention for a decade or more to develop that site in an intensive way, and the way the zoning indicates that the intention was to build tall buildings on that site. So we'll just have to work out a solution that will keep the solar panels operating, because we want to demonstrate the viability of solar energy production in New York. And so I think that's the goal.
Overall, it seems like the city and county are working together to resolve an issue which could or could not have been prevented. But the main focus is looking forward to the future of the Ithaca area community. So it looks like the county will continue generating clean energy, and the city will continue with its plan to have a densely populated downtown. And both will benefit our community in the long term.
Any kind of development comes with its problems. Shading the solar panels is one of them in this case. I think that moving the library into that space was the right choice. Putting solar panels in is a direction that the nation and the world has to move in. We cannot continue to rely on fossil fuels and have wars to obtain access to those fossil fuels. We're going to have to begin using more and more renewable energy sources. And I think it's important for government to step out and pave the way and set the example. If you add in the cost of the war in Iraq to the cost of electricity from power plants, those solar panels are a real bargain.
Thanks to Aaron Riddle for that report. This is the Ithaca Radio Hour.
Illusion brooked no charity, no fear. We offered him the discipline of war in a foreign land. To stalk a starving enemy with a weapon in his hand. Sunny day. Sat vigil at the bedside of the end. case cities quiet at the sight of asking why. There's no trauma like the present, no sound like no goodbye. Justice and the terrorist employ the same defense. When the penalty tries to fit the crime, the means acquit the ends. Sunny day in Terre Haute, Indiana. See yourself in the camera lens. Back in broken Buffalo, it's raining and someone's waiting for a judgment.
That was Patti Whitten with Sunny Day in Terre Haute from her album Sycamore Tryst. Take Back the Night is an international rally in March that is organized in local communities with the purpose of unifying women, men, and children in an awareness of violence against women, children, and families. Ithaca's march and rally took place last Friday on the Ithaca Commons. Here is an excerpt of Michelle Courtney Berry at Friday's rally.
I come humbled as a vessel for the larger voice of spirit that sings my bones, and the millions of ancestors buried in the sea, the black holocaust of my bones and lies, the country built on the backs of our brown, Apache, Shawnee, Cherokee, those African who were enslaved, those Irish, Italian, and any other female or male immigrants that sought freedom on these shores, but found that in the United States, freedom is either not affordable or too expensive. And here again, we are taking back the night that should be ours anyway. And we still do not have time to be afraid and not speak out, because somewhere in the country right now, some man or woman is raped, stalked, beaten, oppressed, and silenced, and it happens everywhere. And some women and men someplace are rapping along with catchy tunes and phrases that call women bitches and hoes, that joke about murdering women, mothers, lovers, lesbians, gay, straight, transgendered, all endangered by lyrics. Regrettably, many of us are seduced. Seduced by catchy hooks and phrases by a rapper whose name sounds sweet like candy. And even some women find him sweet. He whose words, no matter how much he wishes to phrase the latest spin, his words are anger and danger. He who has not resolved his issues with his mother and wants her killed as well as the mother of his baby is the country's most successful rapper. He's now bigger than the black rappers who created him and paved his way. Let's call him the modern day Elvis. I am not afraid to call crap, crap. I'm not, and you shouldn't be either, because we are in the middle of the crappiest time in history, where despite the will of the world, the powers, the original superpowers, the rain and a line and try down to stuff down the words of women, the poems of people of color worldwide, and this poem is still saying no. Not softly, but loudly. How to take back the night, daylight, moonlight, twilight, and the religious right, that mysteriously weird and powerful entity that claims to know who will be saved and who will perish. They do not know that they live in the midst of their own fear, their own hell, which is here on earth, their own hatred. And now I want to say this in my rant. Can Democrats please get a backbone, people? I ain't trying to diss people, but hello, we elect you to go up in there. I ain't trying to act like it's bad to be Republican, but when I'm thinking about changing parties, there's a problem. I'ma go like my daddy did to all the Republican meetings. He still voted Democrat, but he said you gotta check out what the enemy is doing. And Democrats have their tongues cut out everywhere, afraid to speak and say the devastation of 9/11 is not related to what the United States and Britain have done and will do and have done in Iraq. I call on Democrats to get a backbone and stop being afraid of McCarthyism sweeping the nation, where the winds of patriotism blow flags everywhere, even outside strip joints. Pride in our country is not the same as willing a destruction that murders and amputates children and civilians. And profit off women's bodies, the manipulation of our female image in the media, anorexia, poverty, and bulimia are not signs of democracy. And you can support troops and still not support the war. And anyone who tells you differently cannot be listened to, because my brother-in-law and people that I have known my entire lifetime are over there, and I don't know if they are living or dead. And no one will tell me that I don't support them with a fierceness, but I do not support war. And many of them do not either. And there is a war on our bodies and our minds and our poems. And people wish to steal what is ours. And as long as women are oppressed, men are oppressed too, just like Dr. King said. I am tired of arriving at the gate, asking for favors and to be let in, being a good girl, asking for permission to speak. I will never again ask for permission to use my voice, which is the only thing I have left, because God knows and Goddess knows I have no money. But the handout line is a trap, and it's long, and it's like one never-ending department head meeting, and I won't stand in line asking for what should be mine. The Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, drafted during the Carter administration, has been signed by the United States but not ratified to this day. It has not been signed by Iran, Sudan, Somalia, and Syria. It almost passed, but that was met with conservative opposition last year, led by our friend Jesse Helms, and it has not been ratified. It is currently under the scrutiny of John Ashcroft, so what do you think will happen with that? Ironically, Afghanistan ratified this treaty on March 5th, 2003, and over 90% of the United Nations belongs to this coalition, but the United States still does not. What does this say about the value of women in our country, not to mention the devastation to our reproductive rights? It is time to take to the streets and take back what is ours and not be silenced. So if another pollster from ABC News calls you and says, "Do you support President Bush?" you don't have to be afraid to say no and fart in your phone, because that is what you should do. Do not believe the hype. I am not afraid to call crap crap, and you shouldn't be either. Let us take our beautiful, loving, smiling hearts. Let us shine down with glory, and let us say this: we will take back the streets not just one time a year, but every single day. Peace.
A free speechwriters workshop meets every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. at Autumn Leaves Used Bookstore on the Ithaca Commons. For more information, call Kara Hoffman at 387-5860. As part of the Ithaca Cornell Tibet Weeks, Paul Dengyatso, a 64-year-old Tibetan monk, will talk about the life of the people in Tibet since the Chinese invasion of 1950. He will speak on April 16th at 7 p.m. at the Annabelle Taylor Hall Auditorium on the Cornell campus. Another Tibet Weeks event will be held this Saturday, the 19th of April, when Magic Garden Puppets presents The Gift of the Naga King, a Tibetan folktale, at 10 a.m. in the Robert Purcell Community Center. This event is sponsored by the East Asia Program and is especially suited for children 4 years and older. A candlelight vigil to remember those who have lost their lives in the war against Iraq will be held tomorrow, April 15th, at 8 p.m. in Cornell's Arts Quad. Please bring candles. Student Reuse Project collects and sells items discarded by departing College Town students in the spring and donates proceeds to a local cause. This year's sale will benefit Ithaca Community Radio. The Reuse Project is looking for a location for this sale. If you have a space or would like more information, contact Herb Sussman at 539-6779. This week's show was produced by Jesse Lind, Jeff Kirby, Laura Ratzlaff, and Aaron Riddle. Our theme music is an instrumental version of Circus by Crow Greenspun. During the show, we played music by Gabriel Tavares. For online information about the music you've heard on the Ithaca Radio Hour, as well as contact info for events we've announced, go to our webpage at ithacaradio.org/radiohour. I'm your host, John Illingworth. Thanks for listening, and tune in next week.
The Ithaca Radio Hour is a project of Ithaca Community Radio and is produced at Rep Studio. For more information about ICR, visit our website at ithacaradio.org. You're listening to WEOS 89.7 Geneva, rebroadcast in Ithaca by Ithaca Community Radio on 88.1.